The Vietnam War, it's over. Your job's just begun.
A new HBO original limited series.
Welcome to the world of spycraft. Strap in.
From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr.
What are you concealing?
Based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel by Viet Thanh Nguyen.
What if I told you that I was a communist spy?
How did you become this?
The Sympathizer, streaming April 14th on Max. Subscription required.
This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Welcome back to a very special episode of Just My Archetype. Please be on your best behavior, listener, because the big boss is in the room. I just spent the past week binge-watching Season 6 Survivor Amazon, and I feel like I finally have met Rob, the Survivor player. So please welcome to the podcast, King of the Microphones. Apparently, according to Season 6, the smartest player to never win, at least at that point in time, it's Rob Cesternino.
Yes, yes. Oh, it's so nice to finally be understood, Hannah.
I feel like it's not fully my fault that I never went back and watched Amazon, because every time I brought it up to you, you'd be like, you know what? You don't have to.
And I think we both know, like, Survivor people that are like, what? You haven't watched my season? Let's take it as insulting. It's like, if you've seen it, you've seen it. That's fine.
Yeah. I think when I was on Survivor, I posted on my Facebook, by the way, I'm on Survivor, and that's the only thing I posted. I let people decide whether they wanted to watch it. But you're, according to Season 6, the smartest player to never win, at least at that point in time. Did that still maintain to be true?
I mean, it depends who you ask, but we did a panel it was right around Survivor 30, and it was like a panel about like the discussion of the game through then. And Jeff like said to me, all right, Cesternino, all right, smartest player to never win that we said that, but like, you don't still think that, right?
Wow.
And he was like, I tend to say it's Suri, if you ask me. I feel like she's done it a lot. I think that he sort of like, he didn't like to like rip it off of my shirt, but you know,
he seemed to rescind the compliment.
I'll let other people say it. I rarely am the self-proclaimed smartest player to never win Survivor.
I like that it's Suri. I like that if Tony and Sandra are the kings and queens of Survivor, you and Suri are the kings and queens of the smartest player to ever win.
You know, I rarely will like pat myself on the back about Survivor. I really tend to like, if anything, underplay, what went on in my season. Like, I really don't get like, attached to, you know, I'm the best or whatever. Like, it's like not for me to say.
I do feel like you underplayed it, because by the end, I was like, oh my gosh, Rob was wildly entertaining.
Yeah.
Really smart.
Go on. Yes.
In love with Heidi. I want to know how you and Heidi worked out. Are you married with kids now?
Do you know what Heidi like went on to do?
I've been informed that she's married to an MLB player and does a lot of cool charity work.
Yeah, I mean, she went on to like marry like a very famous and wealthy baseball player. And
so similar
really,
type to you. You had a chance all along.
Yeah, parlayed like her Survivor stint into marrying the love of her life, who has generational wealth of 100 times over.
I. Not to segue this into it, but it's funny watching your season because I initially was like, what is your archetype?
Yeah.
And then I realized I had never seen your season, so I didn't know. So I'm going to present you with what I think I will call this podcast and what your archetype is. But you can argue against it and pick a different one if you want.
I've thought about this too in preparation.
So, I'm glad. I'm curious if we came. I think of all the archetypes I've heard, I'd like to title it The Original Superfan.
Okay. That's pretty much exactly what I was thinking. I was not going to say the original. Like I was just saying, because I think I am the super fan. Because I know some people are like, well, didn't you already do the nerd? And that I don't know necessarily if that was what they were going for in terms of like, hey, let's find a nerd. I don't know necessarily, like, if anything, like, I feel like that there's like lots of different like genus and species of nerd. I don't know if I'm smart enough to be a nerd.
I think you are smart enough to be the nerd, but I also love how you reflected back that tweet I got of, didn't you already do the nerd? Because that's exactly how I heard that person in tone. So I'm glad we heard it the same. I think you're a version of the nerd. I also, my other ideas were like humorous strategist. We got a lot of pitches from fans as well. Something comical combined with strategy. But I think the reason I like the original super fan is because the thing that was so fun that you did was you seemed aware that you were on a TV show. Like you felt like you understood that it was a game, but also a TV show. And that was born from being a super fan.
You know, just to go back to like my casting, like, and again, I don't think that the super fan was even a thing on the show. And I think it sort of like came up more or organically, like after people like me ended up playing. And I think that, you know, Cochran really was the person who really changed the idea of there being like a super fan who his thing is that he really loves knew everything about the show. And I think that like after Cochran, a lot of other people like fit into that mold after. But in casting, like they were really looking for somebody to be funny. And so that's why they ended up going with me on the slot that I got in that season. They were looking for somebody who was going to come in and like sort of like tell jokey confessionals, and that Lynn Spillman had thought I was funny, and they had gotten Mark Burnett to laugh. And so that's really what they were hoping for with me when they were looking for somebody to put on the show, somebody who's going to bring like comic relief.
The funny guy. That is another. So like an a Tyson type funny guy. Getting Lynn Spielman to laugh is the best feeling ever. I think I've even discussed it on the pod, but she is not a woman who laughs unless you really have earned that. So you were obsessed with the show, obviously.
Yes.
I know this is rewinding very far back, but do you remember some of the shit that you said in casting that like, because it's hard to be like, I'm going to be so funny that I'm going to be cast on this TV show for being funny. It's easier to be other things like hot.
Apparently that's much easier. But in my casting journey that I had originally applied to be on Big Brother. And I applied to be on Big Brother 3, and I made a video about how I was being interviewed by Julie Chen afterwards, and I sort of like had like a still shot of Julie Chen, and my sister was being the voice of Julie Chen, and I was being interviewed the day after I had just won Big Brother 3 on the CBS morning show, and I sent in that tape for Big Brother. And it was a fun, like, I think that, you know, I was being interviewed, and then, you know, Julie Chen had asked me a question. I talked about how, like, well, you know, there was the whole thing about how, you know, all of the women in the house were in love with me. And then she was like calling me out, like, I don't, that didn't happen like that. I don't remember that. I'm like, oh, they must not have shown it on the show. I feel like it was, and so I was like very, you know, trying to be jokey in my audition. I went through the whole casting for Big Brother. I was talking a lot about how, you know, I was very excited to be potentially like in the Big Brother house. I thought it would really help my dating prospects, that it had been a few years after college where I had I've been living with my parents. My dating prospects were very bleak at the time. I was very excited about the prospects of being in a house with potentially single women. I was very excited about that, but it was like playing up for the, you know, the cameras. Like I had the casting guy was just like cracking up at everything that I was saying. And so, you know, I could tell when somebody is like really liking, you know, the direction that I'm going. And so like I gave them a lot of that. And so I went very far into the casting for Big Brother 3. I got to the finals. I went to like the CBS offices, and I met with all like the executives and got down to like the very last group, and they were sort of laughing in the room, and I felt very good. And then at the last second, they cut me for a different guy who was very, very similar to me, that was on Big Brother 3, a guy named Josh Feinberg, if anybody remembers that season, who kind of looks like me. And he was like even like a wilder version of me, who ultimately got on the show. And so after that happened, I was really upset. I was devastated. And Lynn Spillman, I guess, was looking for somebody like that character for Survivor. And so I got a call out of nowhere to like, hey, do you want to be on Survivor? And I was like, okay, sure, whatever. But I didn't think they'd really put me on the show. I thought I'd just like get back in the good graces of CBS for Big Brother 4. And then they ended up putting me on the show.
So were you as big a Survivor fan as you were a Big Brother fan at the time?
Okay. I was even a bigger Survivor fan. I just thought I would die if I went on Survivor.
That's very fair. But it is funny that everything you were doing for Big Brother fit into what they wanted on the Survivor Amazon season.
Sure. And I actually think like from like a strategic game point, I was looking at Survivor with like more Big Brother like strategy of what I had seen, which wasn't necessarily the same eyes that people were looking at Survivor strategy with.
So at that point, Big Brother strategy evolved quicker than Survivor strategy, I guess, because Survivor, it started with just like, oh, this guy's not fishing, so we should vote him out.
So Survivor is at that point was a lot more, hey, it's our group versus their group. Whereas that Big Brother was it's not teams. It's not a team game of us versus them. You're sort of like looking around the house at like, you know, what the numbers are, and the numbers on a Big Brother vote like might be there, like these three or four people might be voting to keep this person. But then the next week it might be three different people voting to keep a different person. So it's not necessarily like all alliance at that point in Big Brother history. And you know, I don't know how well versed you are in Big Brother history, but my hero was Dr. Will, who I just like idolized Dr. Will. And so that he played a game where he talked to the cameras, and he like really was like letting the audience know what his strategy is. He talked to the live feed cameras, and I just desperately wanted to be Dr. Will.
You know that my history with Big Brother is I've seen like three episodes.
But
this is so, making so much more sense.
I just thought he was the great. I never saw anybody like that before on any of the shows. And so that was what I really wanted to like. That was why I applied for Big Brother. That I was like, I want to be like Dr. Will.
And then you end up instead like starving on an island. How much were you aware of just wanting to be good TV?
Very much. I really did not even like think about like, oh, I'm going to have this game plan and I'm going to win. I'm like, I can't believe they're letting me be on the show. I can't believe I'm here. I can't believe they're letting me be on television. I'm just going to keep saying crazy things until that they tell me that I like you like can't do this anymore.
I feel like there were not the majority of our season, but there were a couple people from our season that my season that had a similar feeling. And you just watched season 33.
Yes.
The same time I was binging season 6.
Isn't this this should be a podcast, I feel like, of like you should watch somebody's season and they should watch your season and they talk about it.
Then they compare notes. Well, I was like, this is naturally what should happen. I mean, I feel like
I have so many questions for you, by the way, right now. I'm trying to be respectful.
No, we can go back and forth because I feel like you could guess the, I would say there were three people my season, may or may not include myself, who had that same mindset about this is a TV show and a storytelling device first and a game second. Who were those three people, do you think, off the top of your head?
Well, I think David Wright.
Correct.
And then I'm not sure, either Zeke or Adam.
I would go with Zeke and me. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think Adam probably saw it as an experience in a game combined with a TV show. And I think that his story was obviously so powerful that it naturally lent itself to be compelling TV. But yeah, watching your season, I was like, oh my gosh, Rob is so ahead of his time. Do you think it's Forever Amazon? You were the only person seeing it as a television show first.
I think so. I don't know what the other people, and I did have like a distinct advantage in that. I feel like that there were people out there that I feel like did not know anything about what they were doing. It seemed like that they barely knew about the show or the game. Like, it's not like that they were like strategy heads who only cared about the game and were thinking like it was chess, or like there were a couple of people that were like, you know, big fans of the show that sort of like knew what was going on. And there was a lot of people that was like, did you even know what this was doing? So I do feel like that it was a simpler time and I do feel like I had an advantage, but I do feel like that I could also see what the show looked like while it was happening. Like, I felt like that I could almost like, okay, this is what's going to be this is the story that's happening on the show right now, and this is where I am in the story, and these are like the good guys in the story and these are the bad guys in the story right now.
See, it almost makes me want to call your type like the comical storyteller or the writer or whatever it is.
No, you had it right the first time.
I think the original story. Yeah, the original super fan.
That's fine.
And then diving into the idea that because you're a super fan, which goes against the whole Adam thing as his super duper fan thing, but that the idea that a super fan is aware of the show in a meta way and telling the story back like a Cochrane. Being so aware of, oh, if I don't do anything, then this is my character, even in South Pacific. But if I do something, then I have a chance of like having a story, even if that was the wrong thing in South Pacific for him.
Yeah, I mean, I would not say that I was like so nuanced that like I knew like, you know, every single thing of like the move based on the story, but I knew like what was going to be good TV, and I knew like, okay, they need something for this episode, like they need something like what's happening in this, like this is going to be a boring episode and not that I was necessarily like dictating my moves based on that, but I was trying to think about like from the producer's standpoint, like what would have been like an interesting, you know, storyline in that episode, and that what could I be potentially like trying to not so much do, but maybe say.
How do we process the the Survivor Amazon? Like, how do we begin? Because there is so much good, but it is also a hard season to watch in some ways. And I'm like watching it through, and there's again.
Talk to me. So what? Yeah. What, like, and I know that there. It's first of all, like it's old. It's, you know, it's 20 years old, and it's you know, men talking about women, and you know, women talking about women, and women talking about men. So there's a lot there.
There's a lot. I will say, first of all, I was like, there is so many good elements. And I actually found a lot of your lines really funny. Like, I think the vagina monologues line, where you're like, they're the vagina monologues, inherently funny. But I don't care.
I don't even know, like, what that means of that.
I don't know
I'm just like, I'm just saying crazy things. And the guy behind the camera is laughing. And so, like, I don't ever think that that's going to be on television. I'm just saying things. Like, I referred to the women's camp was the camp of the vagina monologues. Like, that was, like, a popular play at the time. I don't know what that means.
I just thought it was funny. I also thought the self-deprecating humor of like you know, your whole dating escapades with like, here are these women, but would they date me in real life, was also funny and relatable. So when I'm like, how do we process the Survivor Amazon? I'm not talking about I'm not nitpicking every single thing from 2003.
By the way, like a woman wins, like the women like, ultimately like beat the men. It's a feel good story,
I guess. And then Probst opens the reunion show by telling the woman who won, you were a brat for 36 out of the 39 days. How does that feel? And then goes on to shame her and Heidi for taking off their clothes and asks them how ashamed their families are and how they're dealing with that. So
I haven't watched it as recently as you have.
I would say that the thing that was hard to watch for me was that the sexism was so in your face, and I think it still exists, like just how racism and sexism and all these things still exist on the show, but it's much more coded and there's like counter conversations about it. But watching this, there was just no questioning, even with Probst, who you know I'm a big Jeff Probst fan, but his, you know, the questions and the direction of, especially in the beginning, the, like those first, you know, handful of episodes, I do understand that a woman won. I also recognize that in order to justify a woman winning, there was a lot of iffy talk about mental health and how the
well, what did the they say? Because I haven't watched it in
they said that Matt had to have a 51, whatever the code word is for a mental breakdown called, and that he was crazy and all this stuff. And listen, the machete sharpening was a bonkers montage. No, yeah. I'm not.
And I don't think that Matthew, and again, I don't want to speak for him, like that he seemed like he was losing his grip on reality. Like, I don't know if there was anything that was like a clinical issue with Matthew at the time. So I think that Matthew is definitely like was sort of awkward to begin with. Like, he was totally like out of his element on the show. Like, I don't really know if he knew what he was getting involved with. He was just like an adventurer who sort of like was like there for an experience, and I don't know how they ever got him to like say yes to doing this, other than they told him they were going to the Amazon and he was like, oh, I want to go there. And I felt like that in the real time that he got like severely dehydrated, which caused him to be like just sort of out of it. And I definitely feel like the word crazy is thrown around a lot. Again, I don't know if like, you know, you would even, you know, call it like mental health issues now, but you know, like he was going through something, but I felt like it was more he was going through a physical something that had like, you know, increased whatever sort of like social issues he was experiencing.
Oh, of course. And to be clear to the listener being like, she's being offended by like, I it's not that I'm offended, but it was brought up as like, I had to Google what a 5340, whatever the thing is.
Yeah.
5150, which is the joke that was made. So it was, it's so I guess it does. I hope that answers your question about it's not that there weren't compelling stories. It's just that some of the sexism was so up front that I was just, it was a lot to watch at once, even at double speed.
Yeah. It's like that. Nobody says it's definitely not dated. I mean, it's also like meant to be something that is like it's the battle of the sexes. Like, it wasn't even like a regular season, and there was a lot of like, hey, so what do you think, can women do anything that a man can do? Like, and you know, they're gonna go with like whatever like the most you know, sort of like crass versions of that answer are.
I was shocked that some of the men said what they said into a camera. Like the fact that a guy looked into a camera knowing it could be on national television and was like, well, women aren't as strong or smart as men. And I get it. It's millennial Gen X. It's those old fogies can't have us.
Yeah. Like, yep.
I get it. I get that element of it. Yeah. But I was just like, like, I understand you were going for the camera guy laughing. That makes sense. I can relate to that. I can understand that. Not everything you said was 100, but you know, yeah. I could understand going for the joke, but some of these dudes were just saying things that I was shocked that they were saying.
Yeah, I think I said like, oh, like the women, like they need to get a cell phone and call their boyfriends to come build their shelter. But I couldn't have built anybody's shelter either. Like, so
no, you know, I'm in the same boat. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, you had your love story with Heidi that followed through the whole season.
I never saw anybody in my life like Heidi before that. And, you know, there was not a Heidi that went to SUNY Oswego.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's kazoo concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
I don't usually on Just My Archetype jump so much into a season, but this really was my first experience watching Survivor Amazon. And also really a season below Cook Islands, other than Fiji, which I rewatched before.
Yes, that was your first season, Cook Islands.
Yes, I started with the race split. So who am I to judge the gender split?
Right.
It can
be
worse.
Yeah.
It's just, I was just curious how you like process it so many years later. I don't know how, maybe in 10 years, I'll look back at my 24-year-old self on 33 and just be like, how do I like think about the fact that this is what I'm frozen in time as? It's odd.
Yeah. I mean, it's a time capsule, and you know, it's something that like, I think that we're like coming to grips with more and more, because even, you know, 5 years ago, like there wasn't like the same sort of reaction to the older seasons of Survivor, where I think that, you know, I think that we're at a point where everything, you know, is up for like a reexamination of like what was going on here. That's not okay. And I think it's like we're like coming to terms with how to like have those conversations where it's like, you know, that these things like weren't said today. They were said like a long time ago. And so like if you're still saying the things you said now, that you said in 2002, like you shouldn't be doing that. But I think that like we can all like take a look at like something that was said that was like on like a national television show and say like, okay, like don't say that now.
Do you feel like after you saw other versions of the Superfan, or do you think it wasn't until Cochrane that you feel like your archetype got fully heightened?
Yeah, I feel like that there were other like funny people that that came along, and there were other people like super like Todd also like obviously like another like big super fan of the show. But again, I don't think that Todd was necessarily like treated as the super fan. I think that Cochrane is the person who really changes up the archetype, in that Cochrane is like presented as the super fan. And I feel like that Cochrane, who, even though like I guess his archetype is technically like the nerd, but the thing that Cochrane is smart in is that he knows everything about Survivor. Like,
right.
Christian, who is also like a super fan, like Christian has like an area of like practical expertise of that. Like, he is a roboticist and he also like can solve puzzles like that. Like, it's different. Like, Christian is presented as a genius. Cochran is presented as like, you never hear like that. Oh, Cochran is like brilliant at any other area except for that he knows everything about Survivor.
Right. No, that's a good point. And you were presented as, if anything, a nerd about the game as well, though.
Yeah. But like, I don't think that's ever in the show. Like I don't think that there's any sort of talk about Rob knows like every single thing about Survivor. It was omnipresent in real life, where that there was a point where I'll always remember this, that we were at like one of the challenges, like it was like after the swap but before the merge, and we were sitting around like talking to Jeff Probst, and like I was talking about like, okay, it's, well, this is day 16 and blah blah blah, and I was just like rattling off like some like nerdy information, and Jeff Probst like said that, I don't know if this is like way too dated of a reference, but did you ever see the movie Scream?
I didn't, but I know what Scream is.
So in the movie Scream, like it's a horror movie, and it's from the 90s, but there are characters that are obsessed with horror movies in the horror movie. And Jeff Probst said to me, like, you're like Jamie Kennedy's character in Scream, that you're the guy who's like in the horror movie who knows it's a horror movie. And that was kind of like me during my Survivor experience. But at the time, Survivor has changed a lot, where Survivor is so meta now that it's like its head is up its butt a lot of times, where that Survivor is talking about things that like Ghost Island would never have happened in the early days of Survivor, where we're bringing back props from the other seasons of Survivor and they have superpowers and they've matured and we're showing clips from the old seasons. In the early days of Survivor, it was like strongly like each season of Survivor is a new thing. We don't want you to talk about the old seasons of Survivor. In fact, you know, at Tribal Council, I remember like the first Tribal Council we went to, like I said something about like, hey, well, if I was home and I was watching this and it was like, you're not home, you're here, we're not talking about the TV show. Like, we're talking about like this experience here. We don't mention that this is a TV show and we don't talk about the old seasons. And if you were just like talking about like the older seasons, like the producers like, all right, we can't use any of this. All right, let's stop talking about the old seasons.
Wow. What point do you think that changed?
Well, I think that at the point where they are bringing more and more people back, I think that that is like a point where it changes a lot. So, I mean, probably post Heroes versus Villains, and probably like even closer to, you know, after Second Chances, and, more and more so, like as the show goes on.
Because you have, I mean, I think my point, obviously, you're going to come on the podcast, but also I'm like, you have this bird's eye view because you've talked about every Survivor season. You've interviewed most people that were important from each season of Survivor. So I just want to ask you like broader questions too about archetypes. But also, before we move on, I do think the one time it was referenced as someone who just rewatched your season was with you and Matt. What I understood from watching it was Matt was like, I'm good at nature and you're good at knowing what this thing is.
He knows the game. Right, right.
The game. He knows the show. Like, that's at least what it read to me. Yeah. So it is wild because by the time you get to 33, you have like Will Wall talking about what Survivor Challenge is probably going to be next. And nobody blinks an eye.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
He's like saying, oh, this is what we're probably going to do. This is basically based on the clues. This is exactly the point we're going to do this or that. Around the same time that Amazon was premiering, the guys credited with the first podcast were also premiering their podcast in 2004.
Oh.
Which is, because I was like, at what point did podcasts start? There had been like sort of things where people would record audiobooks and things. Yeah. But the first podcast was credited in 2004. Did you feel like you could pivot being on TV into a career? Like, was that in your head when you were out there?
So what was in my head was that, okay, now I know people who make television. And so there'll be somebody here who will hire me to let me be a PA on some thing that is related to the entertainment industry in some way. That was like my long-term play.
And did that happen the way it did? I know the podcast started in 2010, right?
The podcast started in 2010. Yeah, there's no direct path from Survivor to the podcast. So after the show was over, I was trying to get as many contacts from people that were associated with the production as possible. I wanted to work on Survivor. I had a couple of different conversations with Jeff and Mark about potentially I was going to go work on the dream team and where I helped them make challenges. And that really what happened was that Survivor All-Stars kind of screwed that all up, because I was going in the direction of okay, I'm sending in ideas for challenges to Jeff Probst. And then they announced the first Survivor All-Stars. And this wasn't even a thing that you could go back on Survivor. What? Where I went to this CBS Upfront that was after Survivor the Amazon, and Richard Hatch was there and Rudy was there and Tina was there. I was like, what are you guys doing here? They're like, oh, you don't know about Survivor All-Stars? I'm like, what's Survivor All-Stars? And so they were saying to me, they're going to do a season where they're going to bring people back. What, they can bring people back? I didn't even know that you could do that. And so and then from that point on, it was just okay, no, forget. This is now the biggest season of Survivor is about to happen, and I think I'm going to be on it.
That's wild that the idea of having a Survivor career was for you was going to work on the show, because there wasn't an option to have this long Survivor career as a player over multiple seasons yet.
Yeah. That was my long-term best case scenario was oh, can you imagine? I'm going to work for Survivor. And so, but then that kind of went away because of everything coming up with Survivor All-Stars. And then I was training to go be out on Survivor All-Stars. And then I went on Survivor All-Stars, and then I don't know if you watched that one yet. Yeah, no need. But I have a quicker exit.
I watched the highlights
exit.
Of you.
Yeah, well, I have a quick exit from Survivor All-Stars, kind of non-factor there. And then it was okay, well, go away now. We don't need you. And so it was but I was, you said, okay, we're done with you. And so there was nothing to do. And I was trying to still get something going, where I saw Mark Burnett at the finale. I'm like, hey, but did you still want me to do anything with the shows or anything like that? Oh, okay, I'll have my people. Yeah, I had some conversations, but it never went anywhere with any of the other, Mark Burnett productions. Even that The Apprentice had been filming in New York at that point, and there was some talk about, could I potentially get a gig with the Dream Team? And it just never went anywhere after that. And so that was basically it. And I ended up getting looking for anything that was related to working in television after that. And I had I got one lead where a producer asked me to come and be involved with something he was doing with talking with reality stars after the shows were over, and that they were doing something called the Fishbowl, and they were talking to people that were on Big Brother and Survivor, and I put everything into trying to make that work. And eventually they were like, hey, you got to come out here and work with us in California. And that was where I went to California and worked with them for a year or so on different projects. That company went out of business. I stayed working with those guys in production. And then a couple years later, when I was out of work again, that was when I started the podcast.
Wow. And when you started the podcast, were you intentionally leaning into this, the original superfan archetype, as a way to market the podcast?
I
don't know if I was like leaning into it, but that Survivor Heroes versus Villains was on. And so there was like a lot of buzz around Survivor, but I was really like leaning into that. I thought I could use Survivor as a way to sort of like get some attention to people to hire me for different production things or writing or like directing web video or something like that. But basically, like, I felt like talking about Survivor was just something that I could have on my resume as like, hey, at least this guy's doing something.
And then it built into an empire. At what point in that thought process?
I mean, I don't know if that I could say like, okay, there is a point where that this is like an empire, and I'm using like quotation marks on that, but it just like, if anybody would have hired me at any point in this process, like the whole thing would have just like died on the vine. It would have just like, if somebody said to me, hey, I like this podcast, like, would you come and work for me for, you know, $30,000 a year? Like, yes, definitely. Like, what podcast? Like, let's go.
Gosh, life is so bizarre. Okay. But because you've now had this, you've talked, like I said, you've talked about every single Survivor season in depth, essentially, because
even the
podcast,
bad ones, I talk about them like it's nothing.
The good, the bad, the great, and you've interviewed a bunch of people. I know this is a little bit meta, but because your whole experience on Survivor was meta, do you think that this podcast about archetypes, like, do you think that the show leans into archetypes? Or once you interview all these people, do you feel like they contradict the archetype that you put them in? Are we categorizing people after the fact? I want you to meta this podcast, yeah, in the way that you meta Survivor, essentially, because such a bird's eye view.
I think that the podcast is great, and I love you as an interviewer, because I think that you are like asking people things that like, you know, I should not be the only person to be like interviewing survivors. I think I always like hearing like different people and see where they want to take the conversation. And, you know, there are certain things that like I can do in an interview that are different than things that you can do in an interview. And I feel like that for the most part, the people that they find to be on Survivor are like interesting enough that they got on the show. And I feel like that probably like 80% of the people that are on Survivor, you can find like something interesting to talk about with them. They have like interesting backgrounds, and they're like, you know, like, and again, you have like super hot people that are probably don't have a lot to say. But I think for the most part, you know, they're interesting enough that they got through like thousands of people to be cast onto the show. I wonder, like, you know, are archetypes like not a good thing for the show? Because it's sort of lazy in that, okay, well, we just have this person out there and I don't really need to know this person. Like, I've watched Survivor Borneo 2 weeks ago. And so, yeah, like, there weren't archetypes yet for Survivor Borneo. So I had to really learn who these characters are. But because Survivor has like very distinct archetypes, then it's almost like, okay, well, I don't really need to know, say, like, whatever person that you're going to put out there on the show, because, like, I already know this archetype. Like, I know who this person is. I've seen this person 5 times before. And, you know, right. Big Brother, I think, really is more of a victim of that, where it's just sort of like interchangeable of like, okay, sure. Like, yeah, this person, like, and, you know, you could sort of say like, okay, well, this person and this person are going to work together because those archetypes go together. Whereas I almost feel like that the challenge for Survivor casting is like, can you find new archetypes that we've never seen before? And I think that, like, one of the reasons why I'm like especially excited about the diversity initiative, where, you know, could we potentially see a lot of people on the show that we haven't seen before? One, like, to make the game be more fair, I think everybody's in favor of that, but also that okay, I am like, I might have to pay even more attention to these people because that there might be archetypes that I haven't seen before, and especially haven't seen like these specific archetypes interact with each other, that I think that you could end up like, it's like, okay, it's the same, it's the same, it's the same. Well, if you keep putting the same ingredients into the machine, it's going to keep spitting out a similar result. But if you changed up the ingredients a lot, like one, I have to pay attention more because it's not something that I immediately just see and recognize how it's going to go. And it might give you like various like different outcomes that are really unexpected.
I agree 100% that it is something I'm looking forward to now that the casts are more and more diverse. I also, it's something I enjoyed about watching Amazon. And I wonder if this has to do with, at this point, casting or storytelling. Because something I liked about watching Survivor Amazon is, even, spoiler alert, Jenna, who wins, is super flawed and is told that way. Like, she's... Mm-hmm. Everyone has the like ups and downs, and I know this happens in modern Survivor too, but I felt like I really had to pay attention to like who everyone was,
right?
What relationships were shifting. Whereas now I can track a little bit easier, like, oh, I mean, this person is clearly the winner. At least now I feel like it's like watching David versus Goliath, for instance. I was like, there are a lot, this is a fantastic season, a lot of great characters. But I can pretty quickly tell that Nick is the winner just based on type and story and what's happening. And I can tell who's going to get a growth edit, and I can like pick up on these things. So I wonder if it's, you know, pure archetype, or if it's also has to do with like this more game focused storytelling, whatever. But no, it is something that watching Amazon, I really liked, which is that, you know, like Christy, even, who is probably my favorite character watching your season. I obviously don't know her like you do in real time, but she had episodes where she was not acting great. Like, I liked the diversity of the storytelling of watching Survivor Amazon, for all my criticism of it too.
Well, I don't think that the archetypes were really established at that point yet. I think that they were still in the process of, okay, that this is the person who is this, this is the person who is this. And and to go back to your original question about like the podcast, I think that what I like what you have been able to do is also like a deconstruction of talking about, okay, we all know you because you're the blank, but what is it actually like to be that, as opposed to like, okay, we all assume that we like know exactly what Christian is like or Andrea is like because we've seen not just them but the different people that are sort of like have the similar DNA as a Survivor character that they are. And so we sort of like are able to sort of like, okay, the things that we don't know about them, we sort of are able to like piece together by the way the other people that are like them are, but it's not always the case.
Right. So then on that point, do you feel like your television character was a version of you that you related to? And also, did the podcast then give you the freedom to be yourself after the fact in a fuller way? Because I know that's what podcasting did for me.
Yeah. I mean, I think that the TV show, and because like I think I had a very unique edit in the history of the show where that, I don't know, like, you know, 50% or 60% of my interviews got used. So, I mean, I can't say that that's not the person I was when I was 24 years old and was like, just couldn't believe that they let me be on television. And, you know, just like 2 years out of college as a person living in the year 2002, that, you know, that was me then. I mean, the nice thing about the podcast is that we're not talking in sound bites and we're able to have like real conversations on the podcast. And so that I feel like that the podcast has been, you know, who I am over the course of the podcast, but I'm also not the same person today that I was that started the podcast 11 years ago.
You did have a lot of confessionals. It reminded me of David Wright before a swap, where it's just like every Gen X speech was him talking. No, it was wild to watch it back and see the origin. Like, I almost feel like, and I hope a listener doesn't rake me over the coals for this, when watching Matt reminded me of Ken so much, but well, like, I think in a fuller way.
There are parallels, certainly, between the story of, like, myself and David Wright to, Matt. Myself and Matt to Ken and David, and both ultimately result in like a betrayal at the end of the game. Now that David and Ken were a lot closer than Matt and I, like I kind of saw like Matt as somebody who I didn't really care for through most of the game, and I sort of saw an opportunity like in the last like 9 days of the game to say, hey, like you and I like kind of need each other, and then I felt like that we had like a pretty good friendship that ended up forming out of that. And I think that Matt kind of thought like, oh no, I'm actually gonna, you know, run the, and I don't know if that's what Ken thought, and I definitely have questions for you about how that played out, but I don't know if this is the right spot.
I want to get the fan questions in here, because they asked really great questions and questions about Archetype. But before we do, you keep saying you have questions. What do you want to ask?
Well, I have a lot of questions about your season that I don't know if there's a time at the end for me to turn the tables and ask you some Millennials versus Gen X questions.
I mean, if you want to turn the tables before we get to the fan questions.
No, let's
just
take the fan questions.
Let's get to some of these fans. To the people who sent in questions, thank you so much. Please continue to send in questions. I have another really great double interview coming up after Rob. So please, if you don't hear your question.
And to the people who didn't send in questions, well, I guess you know everything.
Yeah, what are you doing?
Yeah.
If you're listening, thank you so much. I
thank
still
you
love you, and I'm
for
really
participating in this conversation, people who sent in questions.
But if you don't hear your question, I hope you get to hear your question on the next podcast. Alex Gertchev.
But
asks,
also, you know, let's up your game and write better questions.
Yeah, what are you? No, I'm not going to criticize the listener. I'm so thankful to each and every one of you. If you open your front door right now, you'll see a bouquet of roses and a bunch of chocolate. That's from me. That's to thank you for listening to Just My Archetype and for all the support.
Yeah. And if it's not there, then I think that perhaps check with your local delivery services, because maybe there's a delay.
Yeah. Alex Gertchev.
Yeah.
Alex Gertchev. I've tried. And here we go. Here is your question. Did you feel pressure to be performative, and did that affect your game?
Again, I don't know if I felt pressure, like nobody like was made me do things that like, but I did feel very much like an internal pressure to make everybody laugh and deliver. Like I was so appreciative that I got picked to be on the show. I would have done anything to like any dance the producers wanted from me. I would have given them anything.
And for people who are thinking of going on the show, I got advice, and I don't know, Rob, if you agree with this advice. I got advice from a former player that said, give them everything and let them burn you down or raise you up for it. Don't hold back.
Well, that's one of the things that I really did feel like a betrayal when I played the second time. Where like I have very few issues with my first experience on Survivor, but then I went back for Survivor All-Stars, and then I came in with like the same mentality of like, okay, hey, whatever dance you want this monkey to do, I'm your guy. And then ultimately, like I got blindsided. I didn't get like a good edit, and I just felt how could you do this to me? I was like, you're like, me, I gave you everything. Well, like, why would you that, and fair or unfair? I mean, that's just how I felt about the whole situation. And again, it's different producers from season to season, and Jeff is the same and John Kierhoff are the same. And there's like, you know, a couple other people, but for the most part, a lot of the field producers were different field producers than were the producers in my season. And it was just like, yeah, we don't know you.
I'm interested in what you had said originally, which was that they were interested in you working and helping on the show. And then suddenly they weren't. What was the shift there?
Well, the suddenly was that Survivor All-Stars was happening. So that would be like, you know, I couldn't go and work in production and then potentially also be on the show. But yeah, like it was just like nobody was super interested in like talking to me like after Survivor All-Stars. It was like, it was old news. It's a school. Like it's like you, of course, you know, part of the Northwestern Mafia and that you are an alumni. And, like when you're at your school, like you have a lot of school pride. But sure, after you graduate from the school, like the school, it doesn't so much like they're concerned about like the people that are going to the school now. And sure, like you can come back for alumni weekend, but the school isn't like going to necessarily like go out of its way to be like making sure you are provided for once you exit the school.
Yeah, I mean, I think of it as well as like if you being a hero and being loved by the show is what the story is that benefits the show that season, then you will be raised to the highest point of your life.
Yeah.
But if what benefits the show or if what the story ended up being is that you are, you know, a quote unquote villain or, you know, you get out early, then that your goals don't align with the show anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's just the reality. And I feel like some people experience that their first time out there and other people go back and then experience it.
But the thing for me and the thing that like was such a great experience for me was like my ultimate win was like my dream was to be on the show. And so like I got that and like everything else, I was so happy. Then the second time I played, like my dream was like, okay, now I'm here to win the show. And then it wasn't necessarily like my dream to be on the show a second time. So it was like a little bit of a different experience all the way around. Had I like my dream was just to be on the show and I got voted out like on the third or fourth episode of Survivor the Amazon, like I think I would have walked away with that experience. Like, can you believe I was on this? They let me actually be on Survivor. I can't believe it.
No, that's fair. The expectation would be different. This next question, two people asked, so I'll give you both their names. Colsey Mary and in a different version, David Andrew Schwartz, both asked a version of if he returned to play, what would his archetype be now? / would it be the same archetype?
I think that I would still be treated as sort of like the let me give you the what it would be like of me returning to the show where they would like have me say like, hey, you're the guy who now podcasts about the show. You're the know it all. You know everything. Right. And like, yeah, I guess like, all right, well, can you give us talk about like, hey, I'm the guy who knows everything about Survivor. And then when I would be like, get like, you know, your former professor in his season where it's like, I'm the guy who knows everything. And then I like am a, you know, go out pre-merge and then I guess he didn't know everything. So that's how it would go.
We've talked about if you returned, like the desire to also promote Rob Has a Podcast and how funny that would be, how you would slip that in. Surviving out here is like Rob Has a Podcast. You can talk and you can talk, but at the end of the day, only the audience can decide what's worthy. Like, I feel like you would constantly talk about tribal council. This vote is like my podcast. Rob Has a Podcast. There are listeners and there are podcasters and you have to decide which one are you. I'm just pitching to you ideas of how to weave in RHAP.
Yeah, I think that, you know, you could be like a little more articulate about it, Hannah. Come on, that I think you could be sort of like a, you know, it's being out here and like trying to decide who to work with. It's like being in the Spotify podcast marketplace and trying to pick which podcast to subscribe to. And then you see Rob as a podcast and you click that subscribe button and leave a rating and you're all set.
You're right. There were smart. Let's see. You know, being arrogant out here is a tricky thing. Because if you get voted off, did you really know it all? Mm-hmm. Rob has a podcast.
Yeah. So, yeah, like, I think it would be certainly fun and it would really be good for like the ego parts of my brain to think about, oh, this is what I'll do. But I don't think it's a healthy thing for me to be like thinking about what, like, I don't love being in that space of like, there has been like times where I've definitely let myself go there. And the only thing that's good about it, it's like when you want to sort of like not do your exercise, it's like, well, like I gotta keep it going. Like if you sort of like are like, you know, thinking about it, like, well, it's a good reason to exercise. That's the only good thing that comes out of it.
I like that. That's just your reason for going to the gym. Meanwhile, your wife is like kind of a superhero in the gym.
I mean, it's like therapy for her that she is like, gets a lot out of like, her workout, like, her doing like a high intensity workout. It's like a meditation for her. It like clears her mind. That is not the experience that I have with like physically exerting myself.
Did Nicole watch Survivor Amazon before you started dating?
She watched it while I was courting her.
Did she ask you questions while the courtship was happening as she watched?
She despised the women on the show.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
Sarah Noir asks, who's been the best or his favorite version of his superfan archetype? Who's been the worst? What would he like to see for a future evolution of the archetype?
That's interesting. Well, now it's almost like that they only cast super fans for the show. Like in the last season of like original players that they cast in season 39, I think like 17 or 18 of the players are probably self-described super fans. So we've gone to from a point where there are a couple of super fans in the season or one like, oh, I'm the super fan to they are all a super fan. And so now the entire show is like, okay, this person is the super fan, but they're also the, like the athlete. And this person is the, you know, supermodel, but they're, or the super fan, but they're also the bubbly farm girl. And this person is the super fan, but they're also the mom. Like they're all, if you are not even like a very big fan of the show, it is very hard for you to even get on now. And we'll see if that holds true with season 41 and season 42 with, you know, like, did they like to try to find like more of a diverse cast? Like, did they ease up a little bit on more of like how big of a fan are you? But in recent seasons that they went and like, I'm pretty sure if you are not a super fan of the show, you are not getting on the show because the game is so complicated that you are lost if you like are not able to know what a vote split is on the first vote.
Right. It's not fun to watch two people play chess if one of the people has never played chess before and doesn't know any of the rules.
You know, at the time we're recording this, you know, Jeff has come out and talked about how this new Survivor is going to be very
lost.
Tough. Yes. And is going to be like a completely new game. So I wonder if maybe it will be less important to have seen the previous Survivor. And that was not something maybe that they were like as concerned about coming into this newest round of casting.
Yeah. So I do think that you started the lingo that all the super fans would say. I am going to, for Sarah's sake, ask you, though, if everyone's a super fan, do you have a favorite, like a favorite player for Sarah that can, that is under that super fan bubble?
Well, I mean, that Cochran, certainly, like, for like the contributions that he brought to the super fan. And I adore Christian also, who became like, you know, such a, you know, phenomenon on the show. But I actually feel like that the super fan role, I feel like that I contributed more to it with what I am doing off of the show than what I did on the show. I really feel like that the podcast, and not that every single person that goes on the show is a listener of Rob as a podcast, but I think that over the last 11 years, we created a discourse of talking about the show and then like talking about like past things that happened on the show and the strategy of the show that I think in some ways, for better or for worse, you could argue, has incepted the show. And so I think that the things that are happening on the show, I think a lot of what happens, I think, comes out of people discussing the show on podcasts such as Robin's a Podcast.
I mean, I can confirm that on season 33, some of the people considered the biggest super fans were also big RHAP listeners, and that it directly affected things within it. This was not a question that someone responded to when I asked for questions, but I just saw this tweet from Brian Raleigh and it made me laugh. Is Rob the horniest survivor of all time? I just rewatched it and he puts 24-year-old me to shame.
Yeah, I mean, so I think that I am giving you something on television that is probably like not the, you know, a perfect encapsulation of who I am as a person, that I think that like you have to, like, and again, you have to take my word for it of that. Like, I'm saying things because, like, I think that that is funny, but I wouldn't say that that is necessarily, like, if you actually, like, knew me or talked to people, like, that, you know, I'm not going to say, like, that I didn't think that those women are attractive, but, you know, I am talking about them in a way for what I perceive to be maximum, you know, comedic effect, as opposed to like I was not actually trying to date any of the women on the show or like actually pursuing them in a like romantic sense.
I very much understand where you're coming from. I feel like I, when people ask me certain things, I was like, yeah, this was an incredible story. Not that there wasn't truth to it, but I'm happy to lean in and have fun with the storytelling of a show I've wanted to be a part of the storytelling for like 15 years.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
I like this question because I have an answer for it as well. Trevor Chong asks, is it awkward to make fun of contestants in confessionals, then have to talk to them in real life while the show is airing?
That's something that I've had to come to grips with more on the podcast than I feel like as a survivor, because sure, it was awkward, but I feel like that I've had to really fine tune that skill with the podcast. What I try to do is, and it's like, I don't have to imagine it like I used to, but that I have to pretend that whatever I'm going to say will eventually be heard by the person who I am saying it about. So it actually mm-hmm. makes it like very easy to be able to, you know, like do the podcast, because then I have to like say what I want to say and like know that the like what the thing I'm about to say is going to be heard not only by probably the person who is who I'm talking about, but also like the friends and family of the person that I'm talking about. So like, it has probably, you know, dulled my sword a bit, but also like challenged me to try to find ways to say the thing that I want to say. The person who is the absolute like best at this in the entire world is Bryce Isaiah, where Bryce like can talk about a person and the person who he's talking about is laughing with the audience.
That's a great way to put it. You want to be able to make a cutting joke, but have the person you're making the joke about, if they're listening, be able to laugh along. That's the goal.
I mean, that's a skill where that's like the win-win, where the audience is laughing, the person who you are talking about is also, and again, it's not like it's like, you know, like Bird, teach me to fly. Bryce is just like, you know, a person that has like magical powers that can do that. And that's the like idol of mine in terms of like being able to do that. And it is much easier to say the thing that the person who you are talking about would be like mortified to hear. You know, there are people that can do that extremely well and also like don't care if the person hears it. But, you know, that's not me.
Yeah, that's really tricky. I feel like even when like tweeting about the show, which is so much less of a thing than
which you do so well. Podcast, yeah. And you've talked about this. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I try to be self-deprecating because I was a ridiculous, very flawed character on the show and be like, we can joke about this and I can joke about you through a lens of self-deprecation and also giving you a compliment. I mean, Trevor, I did call someone up before the show started and said, listen, I talked a lot of shit about you. Turns out most of those confessionals wouldn't air. So Trevor, if you end up on the show, you don't need to warn someone before it happens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Ask for forgiveness.
That's my piece of advice. Yeah. Ask for forgiveness. Don't build up what's going to be happening. Andy Huber wants to know, what archetype complements his game play best? Should he team up with the nerd, Fishback, the mom, Dina Bennett, the hot girl, Heidi/Jenna, or the crazy guy, Matt? Also, does casting need to look for archetypes, or should they be assigned by the viewers?
So,
two-part question.
The person that I wanted to work with the most was actually Dina. And that was the person that I met up with her and I was just like, yes, please, Dina, I like be my partner in the game. That was what I had wanted. And so like, and I really feel like that, you know, that would have been my dream to work with Dina. So like, even though it was, you know, the season is about men versus women, what men can do, what women can do, like I most wanted to be strategic partners with Dina. Like I ID'd her. This is the best player. This is the person that I wanted to work with. And like I had just seen in Big Brother 3 that Danielle and Jason worked together. And I felt like that the best like partner for me was going to be, you know, a strong woman like Dina, who was like understood the game and, you know, could potentially like be able to, you know, round up like some of the votes amongst the women, and we were going to be able to work together. But ultimately, like Dina wanted to go in a different direction and I had to vote against her. But Dina was just like my dream alliance partner.
And what would you describe as her archetype?
I mean, she was a district attorney, and she was the person who was just like the really like tough, like alpha female leader of the women.
I love that. I enjoyed watching her. Guam Dog.
And she should have played again.
I think she, also Christy. I don't know. Again, you experienced Christy in real time, but I, as an audience member, I would have loved to see her return.
Christy was an interesting person to have on the show, because especially when you talk about like somebody who like is like defying archetypes, that Christy was somebody who like, of course, that she's best known for being the first deaf contestant on the show. But she was also like kind of a hippie and just kind of about like, hey, I'm going to do my own thing. And she was on a tribe with women who specifically like Jenna and Heidi, that she really didn't like see the world the same way as they did, where, you know, Christy wasn't really about like, you know, boys and like the same sorts of things that like Jenna and Heidi were into and like wanted to play the game a certain way. Like Christy was much more of a like, hey, I want to like do what I feel like doing.
Yeah, I enjoyed that, and I enjoyed her on TV. Wait, why did Nicole not like the women?
I'm talking about Jenna and Heidi in particular. She did not like dislike Christy or Dina. She did not like that, you know, these other women were talking to this this guy that she knew.
Oh, yeah. No, that makes sense now that I'm thinking about dating someone and then watching that.
Mm-hmm.
Guam Dog asks, I can't imagine dating someone and then realizing they were on a reality show and then watching that reality show play out.
Mm-hmm.
I never know when at what date do I admit that I was on Survivor, knowing that this person can look me up on Survivor.
Yeah. Does that happen a lot, like where then you have to like make that call?
Well, yeah. I mean, recently on a first date, a guy, we were just talking, he was asking me what I do, and I was telling him that I was teaching and that I podcasted, and he was like, oh, what's your podcast about? And I said, you know, reality TV show archetypes, specifically Survivor. And he was like, oh, interesting. I was like, yeah, the conversation kept going. I did not tell him I was on Survivor. But then we were talking about different dating apps. And I said, oh, yeah, someone told me to sign up for Raya for networking. And he said, oh, do you have the social media following to get on Raya? And who knows if I would actually get on Raya. But I said, yeah, I think I have the social media following to get on Raya. And he was like, oh, from what? And at that point, I had to admit that I was on Survivor.
Yeah.
What am I going to say? Oh, yeah, I have a cooking channel. I mean, I guess I could have lied.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I don't know. Another time I went on the first two dates, I didn't mention it, but I would reference things. I'd be like, oh, yeah, a couple years ago, I finally had Republican friends for the first time. Mm-hmm. Or like I would just reference things that happened because of it. And by the third date, the guy was like, so I Googled you.
Yes.
I don't know. It was and is a big part of my life. It's a thing that affected things. But at what point in dating do you accept that this person's going to. I don't know. I don't have the answer.
Apparently,
Nicole was watching it along with you.
Yeah, she was there in the real time. And that, you know, I'm so happy that I'm married for so many reasons, Hannah. But I couldn't imagine like what a hell it would be to then to have to like tell people like go on a date and then not only tell that I do a podcast, I was on Survivor. It's just like so many things that I would just imagine the person's face dropping. It's like a.
Well, it's not even like it's not. I don't think I am a celebrity for sure, and I don't think it's any love. But it is this weird Google search. I just feel like I have to date with this weird Google search attachment.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a.
And do you find that I don't want to like go too off the beaten path on your podcast, but like, are there people that will like you can tell like if you suspect, oh wait, this person's a Survivor fan,
Like, is that a deal breaker for you? Yeah.
If someone reaches out to me on Hinge with a Survivor opening line, I will always swipe left. And I am so sorry to the listener who just thought, now I'm offending Survivor fans. I just...
No, but it's an invasion of your privacy because it's like, okay, now you have me at a disadvantage and that I'm uncomfortable.
I guess what it is I know that at any point someone can Google me. So if someone knows I've been on Survivor, let's say they've watched me on Survivor, that's not necessarily a deal breaker. But if someone's leading thing is like, oh, Survivor, I don't want to talk about Survivor after a makeout. I don't want to be asked about Rock Tribal on a date. Like, none of that appeals to me. I love Survivor. I'm podcasting currently about Survivor, but it's a very like weird, complicated thing for me. And I don't think I would be like very fun and flirtatious if I had to answer a bunch of, I don't know. Is this,
I get that.
I'm getting flustered, but I'm like, yeah. And then there's this thing of, yeah, I don't really.
You're not even saying like really I won't date somebody who's a fan, but don't open with that.
Yeah, I also am like, it does feel like you're going in feeling like you know me if you are a super fan. Mm-hmm. If you go on a first date with me and you're a big Survivor fan, it feels like you think you know me. And that is inherently weird.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right?
I get it.
I've gotten DMs from folks, and there was one man who I actually responded to his DM and was like, okay, if I'm ever in Denver, I'll go on a date with you. Cause I don't know what it was. It was the way he approached it. He was so normal and cute. And I thought, okay. And then I said in my response, I said, okay, but the deal is I don't want to talk about Survivor. And that was not an issue.
Okay.
So again, it's not a be all end all. Now that we've discussed my dating life, Guam Dog asked about 6 questions.
Yes.
So I want to at least get one of.
He's very inquisitive, Guam Dog.
Guam Dog, he's a curious dog.
Yeah.
Let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Yes, I got 6 messages from Guam Dog, and I hope I choose a good one, Guam Dog. I don't know which of your favorites. Which question is your favorite? If Rob won Amazon, would there be a RHAP?
No.
Where would you have been for Guam Dog's curiosity?
I don't know, but I don't think it would have been a good story of that. I don't think that I was mature enough to have gotten $1 million that, you know, Jenna, who won my season, was 21 and got $1 million. And, you know, I think that she'd be in a different place in her life. Had she not gotten like a large sum of money, like at that particular point in her life. And I don't think that I was financially responsible at that point in time. And I'm actually like a very like I think, you know, like I'm pretty like, you know, conservative, like with money now at this point, because like I've like had a lot of struggles of like making money throughout my adult life. So I feel like I would not be like at a path to like build a business at the point that to the degree of which like we've built up Rob as a podcast without like needing to like get the sort of like education that I got along the way. And I don't think I would have like gone the same route had I won $1 million. I think I would have like, hey, I would have been celebrated. I think that, you know, they really would have like, imagine how many confessionals I would have got if I won. And I think I would have really been,
nobody else would have talked.
And then it really would have been like, he was the, you know, the greatest thing since sliced bread. And I really think that they would have built me up. I think that I would have been like partying like way more like that. And like, not that I was like a big party guy after Survivor of the Amazon, but I really feel like, you know, that there would have been like a lot more like going out, and like I think I would have like wasted a lot of that money, and I don't think I would have necessarily been on a more positive trajectory than I ultimately was.
I've thought a lot about this because I had a few people in my life say, you don't want to win $1 million at 24. And my response at 24 was, screw you. I would happily win $1 million at 24. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I don't have.
You would have been fine. Because I think there's other people like Sophie and other people who are young people that go on to win. And you're a very responsible person. Your parents are very involved with your life. Like you weren't going to go off the deep end.
No, I think I would just be able to afford to get my dog a yard.
Yeah.
I would have that yard money.
Yeah. You might have a condo.
I might have a nice little condo with a yard. I know, but it's still so expensive in LA.
Yeah, you know? But, you know, this would have been 5 years ago.
Oh, you're right. I would have had a condo with a yard.
Mm-hmm.
Just to be clear, there are so many good questions that I'm going through that, for real, if you don't hear your question, it is actually not because of what we teased, that it wasn't a good enough question. I have like five questions I'm looking at that are perfectly on theme. But I'm going to answer Danny's stupid thoughts. Oh, it sounds like I'm...
Mm-hmm. Don't talk about Danny's thoughts.
That's
that
his
way.
Name.
Yeah.
Okay, but his at is at Danny's. Oh, Denny's for days is his at, but Danny's stupid thoughts is his name. Rob, since your original run of the Superfan, content related to Survivor has exploded. Whether it be 34 plus more seasons or various social media content, could a future Superfan be overwhelmed with too much information, making it a strategic hindrance? When a hundred different approaches have been used in a particular situation, how do you know which one is the best one?
I don't think that the best thing about Survivor is like knowing everything about Survivor. Like, I think you want to know the rules of Survivor, but I really don't think that much information ultimately ends up helping you. Like, I think that there's sort of like two parts to it where, you know, I think there's like if you took like a chemistry class, sure, there's like the textbook, and but then there's also like the lab. And so like you could sort of like know everything from the textbook and then get into the lab and like, oh, yeah, this is a lot different than I thought it was going to be. So I don't think that's necessarily like that. OK, if you learn everything about Survivor, you'll be the best Survivor player. It's like it's a tool in your toolkit, but I don't think that necessarily, like, I could talk to the biggest Survivor super fan in the world and they might like wipe the floor with me in Survivor trivia, and that person could also be the first boot in a season.
Yeah, I think ultimately when it comes down to it, Survivor is also a game of people.
Yes.
And no matter how many smoke monsters Jeff Probst adds into the forests of Fiji, you know, situations depend on the actual people there. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the day, people vote based on human beings are not as formulaic as you want them to be.
Right.
You can't present them with this is the list of things I did, and so therefore give me the money. People are, and I say this as a losing finalist, but people are just going to do what they want and do what their heart feels. And human beings are not chess pieces as much as modern day Survivor. And I love you. I've been called a new school player, but ultimately you build relationships.
Adam said that you were the like epitome of a new school player.
Adam says a lot of shit. I mean, what am I going to say?
He said that, you know, Ken, I don't know if I should go full Adam. He's like, Ken would have in season one, he would have been great. And Hannah is on the other end of the spectrum. She's all new school, and I'm right in the middle.
I think that I was able to approach people and maneuver through people in some situations better than Adam Klein, who saw it completely as a game. And I think that it's tricky because obviously you can easily say, that's not true, you lost to Adam. So I guess his point is more provable.
Well,
but I do disagree with that. I think that Adam was very much like, oh, this. And I think sometimes I was like, yeah, but hey, Michelle, you're my friend. Like, here's what you believe. You believe in God. Let me ask you about that. Let me talk to you about that. So what ended up unfolding aside, I actually think I disagree with that.
I thought that you did a very good job in your season. Like, I really was impressed with you when I watched your season back this week. And I really feel like that, you know, that you, I thought were like playing a really great game. And I felt like that the jury did not give you enough credit. And that I'm not trying to take anything away from Adam, but I feel like that people should have given you more consideration.
I appreciate that. And I'm not even necessarily saying that when I defend how I approached it. I think anytime I like criticize anything about perspective and perception versus reality, people assume I'm saying I should have won. I was very flawed and I screwed up a lot. And so did Adam and so did Ken and so did we all. So I'm not saying that, but I am saying that I think a strength of mine was that I knew how to talk to people and just remember that it was people.
You knew what worked for you and it wasn't necessarily what worked for other people. And I really was so confused, like at the final tribal council where people seemed like mad at you about like going back to the Brett vote where that people were like, how did you vote? Why on earth would you vote out Brett instead of David Wright? David Wright is clearly the biggest threat. And then but then you got him voted out at the next vote. And David Wright didn't make the final three. But it was like people seemed mad that you didn't get David voted out when they said they had to. David Wright had to be voted out. And
yeah,
but David Wright did get voted out.
Yeah, I mean, Brett was also, I was not convinced at the time that Brett was not going to go with Adam. There's a lot of things. Perception wise, it was a terrible look to the jury, I guess. And so in that way, it was a mistake. My biggest mistake was one that I dwelled on forever, which is obviously not taking into consideration who, in terms of who I brought to the end, what the perception of those people could evolve into. And I also was missing a lot of information intentionally. Adam hasn't told me, and I think it's open that he did not tell me his full story very intentionally. And Adam's like family, and the winner deserves to win because they're the one that won at the end.
Yeah.
But no buts to that. But no buts. And then I go into buts. I just think that it's interesting.
Here, let me ask you a question. The jury seemed like Chris Hammond stands up at the end and he says, my vote tonight goes to the person who made the biggest move of the game. Adam, you got Ken to vote out David Wright. And that's why Adam should win the game.
Yeah.
But in the real time, I think I had gone to the got up and got to like the craft services at the finale during this part. But you're the person who talks to Ken and really makes the sale to Ken of, hey, Ken, gotta vote out David. Come on. I've been with you. I've been loyal. Come on. Let's do this. It seemed to me like that was more your move.
I've not been very blunt publicly about certain aspects of what I feel. I think because everyone's going to have their narration and perspective on what happened. And I think that people tend to rewrite history after the show as well. Mm-hmm. So it's difficult for me to say anything with certainty, but beyond how I view things. But I definitely feel like there were questions I got afterwards, and there were questions that Adam received or compliments he received. And it was a lot more perception than reality.
Yeah.
And some of that has to do with Adam is very smart and charismatic, and he's a very smart, charismatic man. And, you know, I think that the perception of that is one thing. And, you know, like I would get, like, I had Michelle on the airplane being right. like, why didn't you try to save me? And I was like, girl, I was trying to vote you out because you freaking never included me in shit. So, like, and then I realized, oh, like, from her perspective, I was just this girl who didn't know how to save her, when in reality, I was very much trying to target a specific alliance. But if that's the perception, mm-hmm. then that's the reality to that person. In terms of Chris Hammond specifically, I think ultimately his viewpoint was shown and the audience got to see that. I think it's interesting when he, like in his exit press, and I like Chris Hammond's a lot.
I do too.
And I don't want to say anything that's not going to get me invited to an Oklahoma game. But, you know, like he would say things like, oh, I wanted to go to the end with Hannah and Ken. Because, you know, every member of the jury sees themselves as the winner. So they think, right. oh, if I just sat next to the losers. But the funny thing is, like out there, he never really tried to engage with me in a way that would make me think he mm-hmm. had any intention of working with me or going to the end or anything like that. So, in terms of that commentary, I think ultimately perception is reality. And I can blame myself, too, for not understanding that it's a performance to yeah. the jury. So as much as you want to play things and work hard, if the person who understands how hard you're working is sitting next to you in the end.
Yeah. And
that's going to be an issue.
Yeah. And again,
Adam Klein should like. Understood some of the work I did, but I sat next to him.
Right.
Like
right.
So perception is reality. It's a bigger thing.
And it's
thing.
So complicated because I don't know if like,
yeah.
because maybe Adam was maybe like beating the drum at the final four tribal council of like, Ken, you have to vote out David, where like you talked to Ken earlier. So maybe it's like Chris is seeing like Adam, like you weren't necessarily
yeah,
like saying that at tribal council.
I think I really underestimated how much tribal council is the only place they're getting information mm-hmm. other than, you know, you say something or send someone home yeah. and that's where they're getting information too. And, you know, I think for future Survivor players, it ultimately, I remember when Rick Devens was on and everyone was getting mad at him for getting all the credit that other people were doing. And I said, yeah, but if he's performing and convincing the jury that he's the one doing these, even if he's voting wrong, even if it whatever, it doesn't matter. Because ultimately, the only job, your job is not to do the most mm-hmm. work. Your job is to convince the jury you're doing the most work. Like it's
yeah,
it's all you understood this. It's funny that you just rewatched my season. I don't know. I really try to be not hold back, but I really try to be fair. Cause I feel like anytime I'm blunt too, people
yeah.
are like, oh, you're you're a sore loser.
It's hard. Well, you know what? That this is something like, to circle back to the beginning of the podcast when we talk about like my gameplay, like, I don't really like to talk about, you know, my game so much. I tend to not talk about like, what I did or didn't do in the Amazon. I'm much more comfortable talking about what other players did in, the other seasons. And because everything that you say about yourself and your season comes with like, oh, you're just saying this because, and you really feel like blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, it's hard. And I've talked, I actually did talk about this with Julie a little bit. And when I did a podcast with her, it's just because I point out like a sexist bias or different things, that's not being like, that's the reason I lost this mm-hmm. thing.
Yeah.
But I also think that you have to understand, even after the fact, when people tell the story of what happened, your memory is a little bit affected by what you watch
yeah.
back, and also because everyone thinks they're the protagonist.
Right. I wanted to tell you that I thought you did a really yeah. great job. And I think in the real time, I didn't give you enough credit for your game. I wasn't seeing it and honestly, I think that I was probably like, in earlier in the season when
you had the panic attack that, and I think that that was something that I felt like that really like, I wasn't looking at you as a person who was like a big strategic player in the season. And that's my bad on missing that and that coloring my opinion on, you know, who is, but I feel like that you had like the right read almost all of the time throughout the game. What almost every single thing that you said, should do, like people should have listened to you. And like at the end of the game, I just felt like that, I didn't know why people weren't giving you more consideration. I thought you had a really good final tribal council also. And I think went like comparatively to Adam, and I adore Adam. I think Adam is the greatest guy ever. And a worthy winner of the season. But there were like questions for Adam about like, that he, like Adam, you made this mistake. And he said that, I played correctly. Other people were playing incorrectly, which led to my blunders. I just thought that that was, interesting that the jury was like, okay, yeah.
Yeah, the sort of erratic woman was sort of leaned into. Like, I had to control Hannah just going and making crazy things. Yeah. And it's like, well, a lot of the decisions I made are the reason why we're sitting
Hannah
here
went off the
instead
script.
Of Jay or Dave. Yeah,
yes.
Hannah went off script. And,
like, I planned it all out, and then she was just doing whatever.
Hannah was doing whatever. And how did we get here?
Mm-hmm. But
yeah,
your plan worked. Like, I just thought that was
my plan worked, and while it was an incorrect final three, got us to the final three we wanted.
With no David Wright, which was like the like biggest thing for the jury of like who
I know.
Took out
I mean,
David?
it's a risky thing bringing someone that big to the end. I remembered I talked to someone from a different season. I won't give names because that doesn't seem fair. Who was like, oh, well, we knew to take our threat out earlier.
Mm-hmm.
But this person didn't make it to the end. And I thought, well, yeah, we all knew he was a threat. We weren't playing less hard. You got to set yourself up to get there. But again, in retrospect, perception is reality. So while I do think that the choices I was making, except for who to sit with, obviously, were the correct choices, you give these threats credit.
Yeah.
Like, essentially, the perception doesn't become what the reality is. So ultimately, for that reason, maybe it is a mistake.
I thought who you sat with was fine, that nobody was talking about through the whole season. Like, not one person says, like, hey, we can't let Adam get to the end.
I think that there were better combinations for me, but
because it was Brett
that.
And Ken. I mean that, like, I don't think you could have done much better.
I'm not going to be listing the names of those combinations for my own sanity, but I do think that if there were combinations that if I had sat in, I think I may have gotten the questions. Wait, how did you get here? Where instead it was sort of painted.
And
that Adam Klein's job was to paint it a certain way in the final. And so you could argue that's a good final tribal to be like, my mistakes were because she went off the rails. I mean, that's fair. That's his argument.
This is fun to talk about. Like, I am definitely like not trying to reopen any sort of old wounds here. I'm just all I'm trying to say is that I felt was very impressed with your game. And
I appreciate it.
I said all this in the podcast that I already did about your season. And I just wanted to let you know that out of, you know, anybody in the season, I had the biggest difference between like what I thought from the real time to what I thought on this real watch about watching you play in Millennials versus Gen X.
I appreciate it. I can also acknowledge I had a very flawed experience out there. Like, I made a lot of mistakes too.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not like the moves I was making. I know everyone's like, oh, which game? No, it's just like, I think how I understood to handle myself out there at 24 was not conducive to maybe winning a game of Survivor.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that I've learned a lot from that experience, and some were my fault and some were you know, perception and stuff like that. But I came back and I told my dad, I was like, Hillary Clinton's going to lose the election. That was the first thing I said to him.
How did you get that from your Survivor experience?
Because it is freaking impossible to be. It felt like and listen, Hillary Clinton had a lot of issues beyond just, you know, this, but I was just somehow understood coming back. I was like, I've had a jury of men regurgitate back to me who I am and how I'm perceived.
Yeah.
And I just, something in my gut now understood perception and sexism in a new way. And that's, again, not to say that's why I lost. Please don't come at me. That's not, I love Adam, but it's not just losing. It's a jury of people reflecting back to you. Oh, I took things personally. Like this was hurtful, or, you know, I had someone being like, you didn't do anything. And then the next person would be like, you did way too much. You were all over the place. And I'm like, this is tough.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know if this is on topic at all for this archetype.
I think this was great. And that's one of the things that I think is really great about you doing these types of podcasts, because I think that you have like a way different experience than I had. And I think that you can, you know, have like these types of conversations with different people in ways that, you know, I certainly can't. So I just think that that was really, really cool to hear.
I almost said what I said multiple times the first time we ever podcasted, which was, did that make sense? That's what the comment I kept getting the first time we ever podcasted together was, Hannah keeps asking if it makes sense. She should just trust it.
Yeah.
So I hope that made some sense, but
what you're saying about how like then you get like a second guessed on the things that you do say, and you're trying to say them in like in a very like careful and articulate way, then you like have to also like deal with like, how is what I am saying about being perceived being perceived?
Yeah, I think that I don't mind when people criticize me. I have a lot of flaws.
I don't love it.
You know, kind of annoying. What? I don't love it, but I understand that when you're at all putting yourself out there, you're going to be criticized. The thing that frustrates me is when I'm misperceived, or like my words are twisted to be making an argument that I'm not making. And I think that's why I'm so careful.
Yeah.
Because I know that I could say things a little bit more bluntly, but then I will get people using my words in a way I don't mean them to be.
Yeah.
And that's what has been frustrating over the past 5 years.
Yeah. No,
in my experience talking about Survivor,
I understand what you're saying, because I definitely get that with the I find that like a little bit more like with social media than with the podcast, because I feel like that I have like more airspace to be able to articulate what I'm trying to say, as opposed to in the shorter versions of like what I'm trying to say on social media. But I definitely understand what you're saying.
Yeah, I'm also like not one to, I'm not complaining. Like, I feel like I got lucky in a lot of ways. Like, if maybe on the first watch, you don't understand my story much, but maybe on the second watch, you have some glimpse into like 2% of my story. And that's more than most people who do the show get to experience.
And
so
I also got watching you that you also were a super fan that was there, and your experience was unique in that I think that Jeff loved having you on the show. And when like you were talking about like trust clusters, and then when Jeff was like talking about like, all right, well, let's talk about those trust clusters, and you like are like losing it of like, oh my God, like how weird is this that like I'm on the show and then I just made this thing up, and now Jeff Probst is talking about it.
I also think similar to you, a lot of stuff I said, it was for fun. So like trust clusters sounded silly. And it was funny to me that I got to be playing Survivor and this silly thing I said was being repeated by Jeff. And then the night of the episode trended on Twitter. Like, to me, the goal initially, at least, was just I want to be a part of the storytelling of this show I love. And that's why I relate to your part of the original Superfan. Of just like, yeah, I'll make the jokes and I hope the camera guy's laughing. Mm-hmm. And I was just, it was wild. I think that's why watching it back is also difficult, you know, yeah. as well. Cause you go through this thing. I mean, and you had a different experience watching it back where you were like 50% of the confessionals are mine and it's all. But
it was
a dream, it is a thing of like,
and it was the most fun thing that I had ever done to that point. And it was just like such an amazing experience. And it was nothing but like unadulterated joy for me the entire process.
I'm really glad. And then All Stars came and
it was the joy turned to ashes in my mouth. It was then the opposite.
I wonder, do you think ultimately looking back that it was a positive that you got to experience both ends of the Survivor stick?
I think for what I do now, I feel like that I have somewhat of a unique experience in that for like talking to all the different Survivor players. Like I've seen the high highs and I've seen the low lows. So like I've seen almost like, you know, other than winning the game, like I've had like all the experiences that of the players that I talk to in the Survivor game. And so like I think that, you know, just having success is nice. But I think that also like with adversity, I think comes growth also. And I definitely grew a lot from that's not the only adversity that I've had in my life. I've had other failures along the way, but I think that I've come through each of those okay. And so, you know, it's been one hell of a ride that I've gotten because I, you know, sent in a tape to be on a crazy show that I was obsessed with.
Big Brother, of course, is the show.
I mean, Big Brother, but
which is wild.
Yeah.
I'm so glad.
I love both of the shows.
I don't know. There's something about having different people on the podcast and hearing about how they process becoming like a reality person for even like whether it's like you've made a career of it, or Ozzy had a lot of really comforting perspectives on the experience of doing it. And I think that it's made me think about just like how we experience and then move on from those experiences and process things, like how much your mindset and what you build from it after is important. Mm-hmm. And I'm not toxic positivity. I'm not the person that's like, you just gotta like put a smile on your face and like just be positive. I don't think all adversity is necessary. I think sometimes painful shit didn't need to happen to help people grow. Mm-hmm. But I got a little off topic with getting into 33 stuff, but I'm sorry if I didn't get to your question, specific listener. There were so many, like here, Rob, there were like endless good questions, just like pages on Instagram and pages on Twitter. But I know that it's a Big Brother night, so I know you have to continue talking into microphones. Do you have any last thoughts on being the original super fan or archetypes in general before we, you know,
no,
unplug the mic?
It's a honor to be here. I'm so glad that you called me up for doing this. I think the challenge for the super fan is because also that I think that this was something that you talked about with Andrea of like the super fan now, the person that hates the super fan the most is the super fan. Like that people feel like, hey, you took my spot. I should have been there. This person's not even that big of a fan. I know way more than them. I'm a much bigger fan than they are. That should have been me. And so
the person who comes out there and then is like now trying so hard then to also impress the super fans. That I think the thing that you have to remember as being the super fan on a show is that it's great that you are a super fan, but like don't come out to the Survivor to be a super fan to regurgitate all of the things that you as a super fan heard already on the show. Bring a new thing to the show. Give us something new to talk about and say. Don't just like come on to, you know, play the hits.
That's great advice. I'm hopeful for season 41 and 42. Mm-hmm. Are you excited about this? Do we have any sense of what this new Survivor is? And are you excited about what we're going to see?
I was a little concerned when I saw what, like, I guess in a vacuum, I'm very happy to hear. All right. We've been reimagining the show. Okay, good. But Jeff in his video called the game, the monster, that he talked about how it's harder than ever. I've talked to a lot of people about what does Survivor need to do. I don't recall anybody saying like other than like sort of like cranky like old Survivor contestants on Twitter being like it's too easy. Come on, that was not the feedback I was getting from people.
But do you think that's just a reaction from the fact that it's not going to be 39 days, and he's getting ahead of that criticism by being like it's really hard? Because that's what I read. I was like, as soon as they say it's going to be what, like 26 days or something, the immediate response is Survivor it's going to be light. Too easy. They're not going to start. Right. So I feel like that was him getting ahead of it. I don't know what the fuck the monster shit is, but I like the idea that Jeff's just in the woods in a monster. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Basically, I want Survivor to go really silly. Yeah. I liked the idea that former players are in the woods just playing pranks on people. I want Survivor to be more of a prank show. Mm-hmm. So I hope to see that in 41 and 42.
Yeah.
Like Sandra and Rob's head, but if it were like pranks and funny. Well, I'm for sure curious. I might need a Survivor break though after this Amazon season. It was a lot emotionally.
It's a lot. It's a lot.
But you were pretty fantastic. It was fun. I honestly, because everyone prepped me on Twitter for some of the misogyny and that element, and it was there. I wasn't prepared for how great you were. No one was like, get ready.
See, nobody's
gonna
just preparing
be fantastic.
You. Nobody's
well,
like,
because I think
like,
everyone assumed
it.
I knew.
Right.
No, everyone assumed I knew. Yeah. They were like, you essentially work for Rob as a podcast. You must know how great Rob Cesternino is on Survivor. The truth is, I didn't know.
Who knew? People didn't know.
Who knew? Everyone but me.
Yeah.
Who knew what a podcast was before I went on Survivor? Everybody but me. I thought it was a song. Like, I thought it was a 5-minute thing.
You thought a podcast is a 5-minute song?
I legitimately thought a podcast. I thought it was like a song. And I considered myself a super fan of Survivor, but I guess I never Googled, like, where are the other super fans
Sounds
at?
Like
I would have found
you were on the wrong tribe. You might be a Gen Xer.
I might be a Gen Xer. I was like, how does the podcast work? No, here's when I realized a podcast wasn't 5 minutes. When I got back, Max Dawson, who was my teacher, wanted to say hello to me. And he said, oh, we're just finishing up recording this podcast. Why don't you come
over?
Yeah,
where are the instruments?
So I went over. I waited 5 minutes and it kept going for like an hour longer. Yeah. And I thought, what is this? Podcasting existed in 2004, but for me, it started in 2016. That's when I learned that channels have what cable was. I don't know what was going on. I think I was 80.
well, thank you for having me, Hannah.
Thank you for
this
coming
on. This was a very long podcast.
Where can people find you? This was a long, but I feel like it's not just that the podcast was long. We really jumped.
Yes,
around.
But it was long in the sense of that it was longer than 5 minutes. And I feel like we haven't done enough music.
Yeah. If you tuned in to think this was 5 minutes and the rest of the hour,
I thought this was like you were having me on and we were going to play a song for 5 minutes and then that was going to be it. When you said podcast, that's what I assumed.
Thank you to those who listened. I hope the super fan archetype was discussed to your liking and the surprise season 33. We never did a deep dive, you and I, after season 33.
We just did.
This was our we just did. I did it. Oh, no. Mm-hmm. I refuse to do a deep dive specifically because
I got you.
My reason I didn't want to do a deep dive is because I feel like everyone rewrites history to make themselves the protagonist. Mm-hmm. And I didn't want to be another person. But here I am being like, you know what? You were all fooled. It was me. I was the protagonist. Screw everyone else. Where can people find you, Rob?
Yeah. Okay. Well,
I'm kidding mostly.
If you like Survivor,
we're on Rob as a podcast.
You can hear me. I talk about it all the time on a little thing I do called Rob Has a Podcast.
And you can find me at Hannah Lil Nesson, which Rob likes to make fun of, but it's just my name.
Yeah.
If you disagree with my season 33 takes, I don't really care. I don't want to talk about it anymore. But if you disagree with anything else we talked about or you want to talk about it, tweet at me about the archetype. I'd love to hear from you. If we didn't get to your question, stay tuned.
Yes.
Because after this, we've got a double one of Wendell and Dom.
I was a little excited. I mean, that's a great podcast. Either you're going to tell me that you got Figgy and Taylor back together. And this, they were going to give their first joint interview as the Survivor It couple.
That's it. Big Tails coming on the podcast next.
Imagine that would be such a big... I mean, Wendell and Dominic is going to be great.
Wom is going to be fantastic. We're going to do the bromance.
That's going to be great. But do you think that maybe you could get Fig Tails to come in like in the second half?
I don't know that Taylor wants me grilling him on his baby mama at home and his anti-porn stance. I don't know that Taylor would happily sign up for that. I think the two are connected somehow as well. I don't think Taylor understood how to speak to me on the like when we were filming out there, and I certainly don't know that he could handle me. I
think it would be a very interesting podcast.
It would be interesting, and this is my official invitation, Fig Tails. If you want to come on as a former
hash things
couple,
out,
let's hash things out. What better place to hash things out than with a mediator who's always going to make the joke rather than make you comfortable.
Yeah, I love it. And I can't wait for Wendell and Dominic. That's a great get.
I'm thrilled. I honestly, so many Survivor people have been so down. The list of people that have been on Just My Archetype is so big and so awesome. So if you haven't checked out the other episodes, go check them out. And let me know also who you want to see on the podcast. There are
and I just did. That's how easy it is. I said, Hannah.
That's how
Figgy and Taylor.
Big Tails will be. Yeah, I think everyone's waiting to see like who from my season I'll bring on. And that's it. It's just been revealed. Big Tails. Look forward to Fig Tails. I'll catch you next time, folks. Take care.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details. Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.